Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B this rainy morning is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Allen. And it is starting to clear up a little bit here. In the Twin Cities, the temperature is really kind of down there. We've had rain for quite some time. A lot of things going on, Don, and as we talked about in the production meeting, but we have a new update. Want to move into that as quickly as possible. Our phone lines are open, by the way, particularly for anybody that has loved ones and friends in Memphis, Tennessee. By the way, that number would be 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904. No real big media coverage, if you will. We are able to talk with our correspondents. It deals with the death of Brandon Weber, a 20-year-old African-American in the Fraser neighborhood. I know, Don, you are familiar with that part of the city of Memphis, if you will. Mr. Weber, shot and killed by United States Marshals, and that's kind of unusual. Normally the Marshals are, you know, handle themselves kind of smoothly, if you will. But the Marshals shot and killed Mr. Weber in front of his home after saying that he had rammed U.S. Marshals, automobiles, etc., in the Fraser community, if you will. Mr. Weber was shot 20 times. That's the actual number,
yeah.
not a number we're just plucking out of the sky. Our most current update from the newspaper, the Commercial Field in Memphis, Tennessee, was at 2:46 this morning, if you will. But we just got off the phone with our correspondents in Memphis. Tensions are still high. There have been a couple of pitch battles between African Americans in that northern part of Memphis that you are very familiar with.
Has
been the talk about almost a state of emergency. They're going to have to try to see what happens during the day to day and moving into Saturday night. But again, Brian Weber, 20-year-old African-American college student, University of Memphis, if you will, a young man with a great academic record. Marshals say that he went just south of Memphis across the Tennessee-Mississippi state line. For a lot of people that have been in Memphis, Memphis actually touches the Mississippi line. Mr. Weber, now deceased, went into a small town just south of Memphis, if you will, responding to a online posting about a car for sale. Allegedly, he pulls a gun, shoots the individual five times, but didn't kill him, takes the stolen car and drives off in it, you know, which I'm not understanding. And is confronted by U.S. Marshals later on that evening in front of the home that he lives in the Fraser community there in North Memphis. To sit again, Mr. Weber shot 20 times, according to the medical examiner, by federal marshals. And there's a lot of tension right now. Shelby County and Memphis police have basically been holding the line. You know, the feds just kind of disappeared. You know, they don't do no riot control. They just do fugitive pursuit, if you will. But anyways, that, Mr. Allen, is the update on tensions and uprisings in Memphis, Tennessee, and the death of a young African-American at the hands of law enforcement authorities. In this case, we repeat again, United States Marshals. And, you know, it's kind of, Don, unusual for United States Marshals. I mean, they're the top of the elite to be pursuing somebody because of a stolen car, even if you took it across state lines, you know what I mean? What are you picking up, Don? What are you picking up on this?
Well, I'm just checking back in the historical data. This shooting happened on the same day as the Pulse nightclub shooting anniversary, and I was just noticing that. But it's like people aren't happy, and that area is not too wealthy. Some areas look like a third world country. In that Fraser community, I remember going down to Memphis a couple times and being up there north of Memphis. And, I mean, they're doing the best they can do. It's a rough situation down there.
Right, and you've identified the Pacific area for those that want to use, you know, GPS and et cetera. Could you give us that again? What is that, Highway 61 and Highway 40?
It's north of Memphis. Yeah, it's north of Memphis. If you took Highway 51 or 40 north, you'd run right into that Fraser community, the community center, the school, the health center. Okay. It's like a mini North Minneapolis. Well, it's not like a mini North Minneapolis, but it's similar to the economic situation in areas of North Minneapolis, you know, where they have the health center, the school, the community center, and in a solid area where people can walk to because people don't have cars and things like that. You know, so
if I remember correctly, that area was an area in which a white policeman was actually taken hostage, later killed. Six Negroes who were in the home where they say that the Memphis police officer, white Memphis police officer being held, were all shot and killed by the police on what was called an extraction. You know, you and I, you know, understand the military jargon. Six Negroes were mysteriously killed in the house. That it was a big issue, still a big issue for people in the poorer areas of Memphis. Again, that was a white policeman allegedly was kidnapped or held hostage, allegedly tortured. Police stormed the house when the smoke had cleared. There was six Negroes that were still alive. After that, next thing that came out was their bodies. They still talk about that in the Fraser community. So that's our update from Memphis. Anything else, Mr. Allen, that we need
to
provide?
It's funny you mentioned that, officer. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Mr. Edwards, because just a quick note here, end note. I remember when the Memphis police, when the officer was killed, they went in and killed seven, and they called them cultists. You know,
yes,
they
yes,
did not,
yes,
you know,
yes, yes. Seven,
that was
oh,
very,
seven,
that was, I think that was a headline in the New York Times, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really strange that even came out like that. Our phone lines are lit up. Our number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, would you like to go forward before we take a call?
Yes, let's do that because we are fully committed to what has been a very high profile situation in the city of St. Paul. Involving the St. Paul Police Department that's getting worldwide attention. If you why don't you go ahead, just bring us into that, and we have some additional update. We've gone into our historical archives, but go ahead, Don. The situation in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yeah, it's very interesting, Mr. Edwards. You know that five officers were 18 hours ago. There was a press conference. Five officers fired by Chief Todd Actel. For some inappropriate policy fouling, and that's what I call it. And last night there was a press conference with the St. Paul Police Union, and the gentleman, the officer, he said there wasn't any due process. He didn't know what the chief was doing, and he took huge issues in that. And we had talked about this, Mr. Edwards, on Thursday night, if I'm not mistaken, and with a special broadcast, which is available live on our podcast channel, our show page. But, you know, this thing seems to get heated, Mr. Edwards. I might have to just sit back and get some popcorn and watch this because this is not going to play out well for someone.
You're absolutely correct, Mr. Allen. And, again, for our international and domestic audience, if you would please repeat how they could access our special half-hour broadcast from here in the Twin Cities. Thursday at 9 o'clock, we did a special broadcast. In fact, we actually were scooping the Minneapolis Star Tribune and the St. Paul Pioneer Press to some degree, if you will. we found it rather interesting with the Minneapolis Star Tribune. There seemed to be some slight plagiarizing, if you will, by them.
Oops.
I'm sorry. And
I know, I just said oops.
Oh, yes, yeah. There seemed to be some plagiarizing in yesterday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. They seem to be plucking pieces out of the St. Paul Pioneer Press yet. The Ron and Don program out of the Twin Cities had carried this story at 9 o'clock p.m. On Thursday, if you will, with some questions. In fact, we had a couple callers. We were able to get a couple of callers in on the special program Thursday evening from here in the Twin Cities.
Yes, sir.
Again, that asked us some pretty tough questions. They also asked us some questions about some rumors. And it appears to be more than rumors, but we'll get into that maybe in the second half hour of our program some civil rights leaders, relatives have been involved in some gunplay, violence, and et cetera in our beloved Minneapolis. And then we have a situation where the NAACP of Minneapolis held a press conference yesterday after a court appearance by two African-American women. And the purpose of the press conference was about an incident that happened 5 weeks ago. I'm just not quite understanding why it took the NAACP that long to report an incident that happened on the streets of downtown Minneapolis, if you will. But I want to stay with the work that your associates and the reporters have been doing. I mean, how should we read this situation? Because as we said in the special broadcast on Thursday, as I indicated to you, the mayor and the chief are on the same page. But it's clear that the police federation is really upset with the black mayor.
Yes, that is. You know, and that sends ripples down in the community, Mr. Edwards, because you don't know what level of policing we're going to get now. You know, what's going to happen when there's stops and things like that, because this has caused a lot of tension among the ranks of the police officers, yellow, red, black, and white, you know, that five officers can be shot out the door at one drop. Is this like one of the first times in history this is done here in Minnesota or in the United States?
The first time ever in Minnesota. And again, we broke that when we talked about the arrest and indictment of Mohammed Nord, who is now serving 12 and a half years in the maximum security facility at Oak Park Heights. We broke that to the extent that it had never happened before in Minnesota. And then I looked up a couple weeks later, in fact, just 2 days ago, a writer for the Star Tribune indicating that this was the second occasion as it pertains to a law enforcement officer while on duty being indicted, convicted, and sent to the penitentiary. That is not true. Mohammed Nord, an American Somali, was the first ever. And so in the case of these five white officers that have been fired by the chief of the department, supported by the black mayor, if you will, in his actions, first time it's ever happened. There's never been a mass termination of law enforcement in any jurisdiction in the history of the state of Minnesota, or even when Minnesota was a territory. You know what I'm saying, Don? That was way back in the 1850s. But anyway, to your specific question, sir, yes, this is a first. It was a year-long investigation. Now people are saying, I think that the union president was quoted as indicating that there was an absence of due process. Could you kind of enlighten us on what his specific comments and concerns were?
Yeah, I was trying to look it up so I could play it, and the clip is just way too long to play during the show. But in essence, Mr. Edwards, the officer felt that there wasn't any due process in this firing, even though the investigation went on for a year. And he also pointed at the media as being a judge and jury, And pointed at the mayor and the police chief for playing this out in the media versus, you know, the due process and the proper investigation. And he did not answer any questions for the reporters after the news conference and walked off. And this is going to be interesting, like I said in the beginning, how this plays out, because it's going to get ugly quick.
Well, one of the things that I want to take note of, if you will, for historical purposes and the establishment of a historical profile, the chief had his command staff. It was in yesterday's St. Paul paper. And it was kind of, for one that has been watching the difficulty that both departments have been having in recruiting people of color, in the case of St. Paul, certainly African-American women, because St. Paul does not have a single African-American female police officer. There are only six over here in Minneapolis. And it was interesting because I'm looking at the picture. In fact, it's online right now, Don. Looking at the picture of the in the St. Paul Pioneer Press yesterday, there were nine members of his command staff that were standing with him. In other words, he brought out his guys to know that, quote unquote, they're backing me, though the expression on their faces did not necessarily imply that. But what kind of caught my attention there, Don, even though there are only, I think, 38 or 40 Negroes on the St. Paul department, his command staff is all white. And so there's Negro in a command position on the nine member, maybe, you know, if there was a African-American, maybe he was sick the other day, I don't know. But I did find that somewhat peculiar at a time when some leadership in St. Paul have been complaining about the inability of the city of St. Paul and by extension its department to get African Americans on the department. Now, on the other hand, in Ramsey County, the new, well, he returned after an absence of 8 years, of Fletcher has is top heavy with African Americans. The former chief Corky Finney, a native of St. Paul and etc., is like the number two man in the Ramsey County Sheriff's Department. You remember the now assistant commissioner for public safety, young Booker Hodges, was in the Ramsey County Sheriff's Department. Some thought that he was going to move up in the ranks. It didn't happen, but lo and behold, John Harrington, the former black chief of the St. Paul Department, reached back and brought Booker in. In fact, Booker has been working with some of our African-American activists over here in Minneapolis to enlighten, if you will, familiarize the Negro community with what is the goal of the commissioner and the Department of Public Safety, if you will. A lot of things going on. By the way, we must identify, Don, we would be remiss, is that today is Juneteenth, right?
Yes, it is Juneteenth.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to rain, but it's Juneteenth celebration in somewhere over north. I don't know exactly where it is.
Bethune Park, the big park there, in which Phyllis Wheatley, one of the oldest settlement houses in the United States, is located, though it basically is pretty much inactive. I mean, there's not much that's been going on at Phyllis Wheatley Community Center for the last 15 years, but anyways, yes, that's where Juneteenth is, and we wish them the best, because given the level of violence, and we're not drifting away from St. Paul and the five officers fired, if you will. And by the way, the history of the former St. Paul police officer who is a Hmong, if you will, is rather interesting. It seems like this guy has some real connections, even though he was fired from the department about, 14 years ago? He runs, I've heard some people who say they've been in that pizza place that is owned by his wife. The St. Paul Dispatch said his wife owned it. Minneapolis Star Tribune said that it was jointly owned by he and his wife. But this former St. Paul police officer, a Asian, if you will, got quite a history and has been involved in a number of incidents, and apparently he has a crew of bouncers that operate out of that pizza place that will, you know, kind of jack you up, man, you know. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Edwards, I mean, I've been reading the story here in the Pioneer Press at TwinCities.com on this, covering this story, and I had another quick thought I'd like to run by you to see what you think, your analysis, is that wonder if Chief Axel is doing this to send a message to stop some corruption that he saw brewing. So say the union steps in and all five officers get their job back. Do you think that the corruption is curved, that officers are going to be a little bit more careful? They're going to do, I'm just thinking long term, you know, say like the union already is intervening, and there's going to probably be an arbitrator, and there's going to be some decisions made by the referee, et cetera. After this happens, just say these five officers get their job back. What message?
I think that that's a strong possibility, Don. You've asked that question of me. I'm playing with a little different set of numbers. I would think that two, maybe possibly three, of the termination of the officers would be upheld by the arbitrator, if you will, if it goes to mediation. Of course, I'm fairly sure that a couple of those officers are veterans. Now, that may be the due process issue that the president of the St. Paul Police Officers Federation was raising. You're a former veteran, if you will. You know there are certain protections that you have as it pertains to your job, if you will, even though you're a black guy. You know, but anyway, there are certain protections that you have. Maybe that was the due process issue by the president of the St. Paul Police Federation. I'm not sure, per se. And, you know, one of the reasons for that, Don, is that this process has been going on for over a year. In fact, the 20th of June will be the anniversary of that incident at the pizza place. But the former Asian St. Paul police officer had quite a history. And there, you know, was a lot of things. It's interesting that you raised the issue of corruption, affiliation, if you will. And that's an important word, affiliation. You know, for the officers to stand around, and by the way, the beating of the individual, his initials were, if I'm not mistaken, M or N of V. I'm pretty sure that the V stood for Vang, if you will. I mean, mm-hmm. There are so many Asians that use the last name Zane. I'm pretty sure that the gentleman that was beaten and hospitalized for about 3 days before he went in and filed a complaint way back in June of 2018, I'm thinking that there was more than enough time to get the information. By the way, there has been a situation in that particular matter, and the activities of Mr. Chalk, the former police officer, that questions possible affiliation, if you will, and corruption, it may have been something that was uncovered by the Internal Affairs Group. Let me just say this also, Ms. Allen, for our listening audience around the world. The Civilian Oversight Committee, which, by the way, has had some growing pains here over the last couple of years. They maintained the Carter administration maintained that they had gotten things straightened out. But there had been some problems, lack of support and trust between the Citizens Police Review Committee, which I think is in one of those stories, I guess the St. Paul Minneapolis paper dealt with it, but that committee had just, this is interesting, had just gotten a hold of a report, according to the copyrighted story in yesterday's edition of the St. Paul Dispatch, had just gotten the investigative report. Now, if you remember, it was just a week ago that on this program, the Don and Ron program, we were talking in terms of a couple. In fact, it was the chair and the vice chair of the Citizens of Oversight Police Misconduct or Conduct Committee that had resigned and blasted Mayor Carter and the chief because they said there was a great failure to work with the Citizens Review Panel. Remember that? That you have that right there on
yes.
your computer. And we have it. I've been analyzing just what the political nature of that was, because there was a lot of friction going on in St. Paul with regards to the resignation of the two individuals from the, again, the Police Oversight, it's got a long name, Don, you know, but the Police Oversight Citizens Committee. And so it appears that the department was under some pressure to ultimately make a determination, and the chief looks like he said, well, I tell you what, you know, it's kind of like what happened over in Minneapolis, where the folks kept, activists kept up that they wanted a police officer to be made example of, and what the system did was took a person of color, a American Somali, and made them the example of, you know, giving them 12 and a half years in one of the most hard prison facilities here in the state of Minnesota. So sometimes you need to be careful what you wish for. You know what I'm saying? Because on the other hand, everybody was quiet during the NOR investigation, the NOR trial, and the NOR sentencing. Everybody's been quiet in the civil rights community and communities of color, except for the Somalis. And as we had previously reported, even the Somali community has been told, be careful, boy, watch your step, because if you step too far out here and make it too political, some of you may be on a plane back to Mogadishu. In other words, deportation time. So there was some heavy stuff going on. Yeah. But the phone lines are open.
A lot of stuff. Yeah, we have some calls. Ms. Harris, I just want to say real quick before we take this first caller, it looks like a friend of the show. There's been an uptick. It hasn't gotten to the Star Tribune or the mainstream media, but there's been an uptick in Minneapolis and St. Paul of young Somali youth doing a little bit of violence here and there, jacking people, beating them up, and there's a lot of talk from high school age to about 21 years old, and they run 6-7 deep, and people just, you know, take another look. Be careful when you're out there. But let's go to the phone lines here.
All right.
Caller, friend of the show, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. A very, very enlightening program, as always, you know, and trying to digest all of this. But I guess I'll go back to one of the first things that you were talking about, the police. I mean, officers seem, at least in Minneapolis, St. Paul, they seem to operate with impunity. You know, the union directs everything, you know, the mayor, the city council, they have no control over these police. The police can do whatever they want. They get exonerated for whatever they do. And so the St. Paul police, you know, he stepped up. And as Mr. Allen said, this is going to be very interesting how this plays out, because there's forces against the mayor in St. Paul. There's forces against the chief. And so what you have is almost like, what do they call it? OK Corral, Hatfields, McCoys type of infighting between people that are supposed to be focused on taking care of the community. So it's very interesting to watch this, how they're kind of imploding among themselves.
Yes, yes. Well, good point, Em, because Mr. Allen asked a question of me earlier on this program. Was this precedent or unprecedented? It is unprecedented. I mean, when you knock five law enforcement officers off at the same time over the same issue, if you will, and that is lack of quote-unquote performance and exercising their authority, if you will. That's interesting, you know.
It would have been interesting if
it had been five black officers. We would have had a different conversation going on in the Twin Cities. If it was five black officers or even a couple of black officers involved as a part of the group of five, we would have it all together. Because I have to tell you, my brother, I think that the conversation about these officers standing by while the former St. Paul officer, Chork, beat a man, putting stitches in his head and et cetera, there would be a different perspective, if you will, a different kind of reflection, if you will. And we would start hearing statements that we heard during the situation pertaining to Muhammad Noor 2 years ago, that the blacks are unqualified, poorly trained, if you will, savage, and etc. You know, the papers on pertaining to the five officers, and by the way, contrary to what the Minneapolis Star and Tribune said, gentlemen, yesterday's edition of the paper released the names of the officers, the five officers, if you will. And so it's a different kind of we're concerned about our police officers. I repeat again, gentlemen, if there had been even one black involved in that group, and God help everybody if all five of those officers had been black, if you will, we would have a different narrative. Yeah. Go ahead.
Mr. Edwards, I still think there's a real undercurrent in that issue, in that the Hmong officer owned a club, owned a bar, okay?
Let me just say this. This is what I'm hearing. Don't want to throw nothing around. The Minneapolis Star Tribune said that he and his wife owned the bar. The St. Paul Pioneer Press, which you have to give deference to, indicated the bar was owned by his wife. I would refer you back. We don't know who owns the bar. You know, the bar could be owned by somebody in Cambodia. We have no idea.
No, we don't. You know, officers, I mean, people in public works have owned businesses and have been feeding from the public trough for years, okay? But I see an undercurrent, you know, here is an Asian, you know, it's almost like, how can this guy own a bar? He's a police, and I just feel that there's something there that is just...
No, he's a former police officer. He's not a current, he wasn't a current. He's been gone for 14 years. He is a former, Chalk is a former police officer who was forced. And I don't know if you had all the details on that, him. He was forced from his position because he did it himself or he put it on somebody else. His weapon, his police-issued gun, was used in a terrorist-style attack in 2003 on Hmong political leaders, both at a club or a restaurant that these people were sitting in and a home. The weapon was used to fire shots, and so when they recovered the weapon, it kind of went like, oops, that Chalk, as it pronounced, it was his weapon. Researched that here at the Donnie and Ronnie. He was not a current police officer. He's been gone for 14 years.
But your great paper, the Star Tribune, also says on the front page, that the chief says critics need to read the files on the five cops he fired. Now, having been a supervisor in the public county area, those files are not public. All right? Those files.
Yeah,
so
we know that.
For him
yeah,
to
we,
say
we know
that,
that
we need
we
to read
that,
those
yeah.
files,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge misstep.
Could be, and it's the responsibility of the police union to litigate that and to make sure that the franchise of the five white police officers are protected. And I assume we will see that, though I don't think that we will be getting as much information as it pertains to this. And by the way, the former St. Paul police officer was himself charged in January this year with misconduct and assault and et cetera. So this has been there for a long time. A lot of the civil rights leadership in St. Paul knew about this, but for whatever reason, until the Minneapolis Star Tribune went into court 4 or 5 days ago asking for, under the Freedom of Information Act, the reports. Now, I just indicated on the record purposely on this program that in yesterday's edition of the St. Paul newspaper, not Minneapolis, but St. Paul, is that the Civilian Review Authority in St. Paul was questioning why they were just getting the report. And I think that has great validity. Why were they just getting the report? I mean, this is just, in fact, they were supposedly, Mr. Allen, the Civilian Review Authority in St. Paul, supposedly under the rules, was supposed to be a participant in the investigation by the Internal Affairs Unit. So we don't know. We have no idea. But we want to get to any other calls that we have. M, appreciate you calling in, checking in with us, and we'll all keep each other abreast. All right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. And let's go down here. We have another caller. Last 4616. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, sir. Am I on the air?
Yes, sir.
Yes, you are, sir. What can we do for you? Hey, what's your question?
Well, my question is this. You know, you got to give kudos to Mr. Axtell for stepping up to the plate and having the testicle fortitude to see that the culture of corruption that goes on inside these police departments has to start and end with the chief. Now, he's showing all of these other black chiefs throughout the country that this is how we do it, okay? This is not how we not do it. This is how we do it, top down, bottom up, bottom down, top up. Now, I go to show you that this state is very racist and very retaliatory. If you go to right now your local Pioneer Press news on page 2A, it says local at the top. Under the bottom, it says city ordered repairs at the mayor's rental property. He must also be registered his house at vacant. See how quick they do things here in our beloved Shangri-La? For you not saying anything as the black mayor and not going against your police chief, or we'll get back with you the very next day. If that rental property had been sitting there prior to all of these five officers' situation, then all of a sudden the mayor's rental property is an issue today. And then when you look on the front cover, the union man, the union, Mr. Coots, union unfair portrayal. Now, in that scathing report, Mr. Edwards, you know this, in that scathing report that just came out about every police department in the United States, and it was done by the University of Cincinnati, Ohio, it said that basically a lot of the union presidents are go along to get along. And they want that job, they need that job, and you could be just like in the same situation with Muhammad Noor, whether it's black, white, red, blue, or brown, you're not going to step up to the plate unless it's a Caucasian guy. And remember, and when the Caucasian guy shoots a black guy, it's business as usual.
You mean such as what's happening in Memphis, Tennessee, as we speak? Yeah, you're right about that, buddy.
And the folks in Memphis, Tennessee, if you notice this year, they weren't taking that too lightly or slightly. When they start busting out them windows with big bricks and big, and the Memphis Police Department that has, I think, a black chief as well, we are ready to die for our freedom. okay? Don't talk about getting it to us. Don't talk about, oh, wait till tomorrow, or wait until we get this here law passed. They're not waiting on the legislators. So we got a powder keg going on in this country right now. And what the, all of these Trump drunk Caucasian people really need to sit down and take a back seat and say, well, not only did he have me fooled, but guess what? He drew the racism out of me, too. And on that note, I'm off.
All right. Take care. Thank you, sir. Interesting observations. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. We've got others holding. Let's get to them on Saturday morning here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, caller 7935. You're live on the air. Do you have a question or comment? Hello, caller. Last 47935. Do you have a question or a comment? They probably just want to be in the queue. Let's try this right here.
Let's move on. By the way, the last caller kind of raised some questions because on our worldwide special program Thursday night, we got challenged about that certain information is being suppressed as it pertains to, you know, who's a favorite a civil rights activist and et cetera. And by the way, on that particular note, I noticed we haven't had the kind of updates on the arson that took place on one of our, you know, in the vicinity of one of our lakes. Are we going to get an update, Don, on that? Because the declaration was that Somali terrorists had set Lola's on fire, and Lola's is gone now.
It went dark on us.
Did we have anything on the computer with regards to the name of the suspect that allegedly the Minneapolis Police Department was saying had been taken into custody? Do we have a name? Did we ever get a name?
No, I mean, I don't see anything. I mean, I'm kind of looking through it right now, Mr. Edwards, and it says man charged, but I'm going to just scan this real quick. And here we go. Noah O. Elami, 23, dumped hot coals from the hookah behind the garbage cans on the building's southwest corner, causing a blaze that eventually engulfed the building. Mr. Edwards, I'm no forensic fireman, but I'm finding this hard to believe looking at this picture. Okay?
And I think we all are.
Afterwards,
I think we all are.
Yeah, I'm looking at this picture of this guy with some like hot flat like coals or something, dumping them down next to a concrete wall, mind you, behind a recycling plastic garbage can. And I'm not understanding, again, for our listeners, just full disclosure, I am not a forensic firefighter or fire person inspector. But from a layman looking on, and then seeing the pictures afterwards, I don't know how those hookah coals jumped to engulf the inside of the building.
Well, not only that, we were talking in terms of, I do have probably a little bit more as a layperson experience than the average person, having been the federal monitor for 11 years of the Minneapolis Fire Department while it was under court supervision. I was the chair of the committee reporting to the federal court. But I had good relationships with a lot of firefighters and et cetera. The thing that gets me about that, and we want to come back to the five white officers in St. Paul, but the thing that gets me, you remember we were talking a couple weeks ago about the aerial view, that fire started right in the center. It looked like probably the middle of the kitchen of that building. And I'm like you, I don't know how the fire could have crawled up the wall, if you will. And you remember it was somewhat wet out there, so you're not talking about, you know, a drought, and there hadn't been any precipitation for, you know, 9 or 10 weeks. I'm like you. I'm trying to figure out how and what was the accelerant that was used. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
The article you have
there in front of you, I have on my computer. I you know, what was the accelerant? How did they get that flame to go up the side of that brick building up to the roof? Because the fire department reported in their reports that their response time was about 4 minutes. And by the time that they got there, that building was fully engulfed. I don't know what's going on. You know, people are whispering that certain civil rights leaders, you know, have a passage of freedom, if you will, to do what they want to do and get away with and tunnel and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know just what the heck is happening, but the phone lines are open.
Yeah, we have some callers, Mr. Edwards. I'm going to try to get these callers in. Someone did call back here. Caller, last 47935, you're live on the air. What's your question or comment? Caller? Okay, they want to remain in the queue. Let's go to this one here. Caller, 1924, last four. You're live on the air. Okay, Mr. Edwards, it sounds like a listening party. We have about six or seven calls.
Yes.
I guess they all want to be in the queue. That's fine. That's
okay.
Perfect. But Mr. Edwards, on that note, I don't. That's the question that I had that we're gonna have to keep raising is, how did some coals, you know, get to the middle of the building and burn it down from the concrete wall on the outside? And I didn't see a jug of gasoline or some diesel or anything with him in this picture. And they let the girl go.
Remember the
girl came in?
Yes.
So it's hard to believe how they say that building burnt down. Go ahead, sir.
Well, it also comes at a time when the park board seems to be dragging its feet with regards to a commitment to rebuild a new structure there, a state-of-the-art structure, and allow Mr. King to be the proprietor. People keep talking about that he was the owner. He wasn't the owner of any aspect of that. The land was owned by the park board. The building was owned by the park board, and any new building that is constructed would be owned by the park board. You have an individual that is renting, if you will, the facility for the purpose of running a business, if you will. And I keep hearing the statement that the individual was the owner of the facility. I would maintain that everything, pertaining to insurance was under auspices and control of the Minneapolis Park Board, which by the way, has its own police department. I think they have 27 officers who are sworn and accepted. But I just wanted to go to that. I don't want to leave the key piece with regards to the five officers. We asked the question of each other earlier from our respective studios. I think that at least two of the five white officers will be made examples of. That's my take, Mr. Allen, because there was injuries, and their own cameras captured the brutal beating. And of the person identified as MD, if you will, and you know, people are somewhat confused. I was surprised that M thought that the Asian officer was still an active member of the department when he's in fact been gone for 14 years. But he's got a reputation as a guy that, you know, kind of on the inside, if you know what I mean, Mr. Allen. in that part of town with regards to how he runs his establishment, handles things, and et cetera. But anything else? And then again, we are not getting any question about the allegations that a person affiliated with a relative who has high standing in the civil rights community is being held on charges of aggravated assault. I guess that just must have been something that was made up by somebody, right? Maybe social media or something, whatever. You know.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just looking at that and I'm like, okay, that's strange. Let's see here. Nope, there is no new callers, Mr. Edwards. Also, the downtown Minneapolis, I've been hearing a little rumblings on social media and talking to some folks personally that the groups that are down there walking around are having challenges putting a lid on what's going on. And it says in some cases, some areas, there's an uptick. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Well, I, you know, I have received inquiry from around the country that when they finally saw, and you certainly trained me that you talk about live stream and et cetera, people were shocked when we initially pointed out the fact that the Mr. Clark was shot and killed right in front of the first precinct in downtown Minneapolis. That's the first precinct. And people were saying, well, what the heck have you guys got? People are being shot and killed in front of the police station. I said, hey, we're not on the inside as it pertains to our leaders and et cetera. But I'm puzzled because we get an African-American shot and killed in a gun battle by a guy, by the way, that had just gotten out of the penitentiary, had served about 14, 15 years for murder. Uh-oh. We're supposed to talk about that. And, Mr. Clark, in gentleman's name, shot and killed right there, in, as we said before, in front of the first precinct. And yet I don't hear anything, but then I see the NAACP yesterday talking about two women that had a run-in with police officers working downtown. I mean, I can understand that, but, wow, it took an entire month to get the narrative together. There must be some selectivity going on in our beloved city, Mr. Allen. As I said just a minute ago in regards to St. Paul, if you're an insider, you know what I mean? If you're a guy that, quote-unquote, we work with kind of thing, you can get away with stuff. And by the way, we've had 15 people shot in the last week and a half here in Minneapolis. Okay, I mean, we owe it to our community to point that out. And by the way, the young man that was with Mr. Clark, if Mr. Clark was being shot and killed trying to help him, that young man is paralyzed. Okay, he's paralyzed. And there's been no reference to that. And organizations that have not spoken out because, if I'm not mistaken, it doesn't that constitute gun violence?
Yeah, that does. That does constitute gun violence. You're absolutely correct. Not a good thing.
I'm just not sure. But, you know, maybe people circulate at Juneteenth this afternoon. Actually, it's getting ready to start about a half hour. Maybe there'll be conversations now. By the way, and I know that, you know, you and I would not have been invited under any circumstance, but there was a panel discussion at Bethune Park 2 days ago in which this was interesting. It was the elders and the youngsters, and the young people were, quote unquote, putting the older African Americans in their proper place with regards to our time has come and gone, you know, whatever that's supposed to mean. And I'm too bad we couldn't have gotten some feedback from people that were present at that. I guess you would call it a town hall meeting, right?
Yeah, it's town hall meeting. I don't even know. Do they have that one at UROC? I'm not even sure. So.
No, it's that the one that's going on that went on that night. Now they had that at Bethune. Maybe Phil's Wheatley. I don't know. It certainly was not at UROC. In fact, I know that State Senator Hayden had a meeting there a week ago. Again, talking in terms of safety in the community. Everybody talks about it. You know, the importance of safety. Yeah. And yet we, like I said, we've had 15 African Americans. Well, I take that back because we've had a couple Caucasians shot and killed by what the authorities say were people of color, African Americans, Somalis, or whatever. But I guess if we don't want to be too toxic, I'm just kind of maybe backing up a tad. We don't want to be toxic, you know. So maybe these things aren't supposed to be reported. What do you think we are supposed to be talking about?
Oh, sunshine, rainbows, and lily pads or something. You know, it's very interesting, Mr. Edwards, because you look in the news, and I'm seeing, like, the Minneapolis City Council, their reactionary stance to have more security at City Hall with these incidents going around. they seem very reactionary, but they're not reactionary on what's happening in the streets of downtown Minneapolis. Now, as you know, Mr. Edwards, downtown St. Paul is pretty much dead after 6 p.m. Not a whole lot going on. There are kids wandering the streets and things like that. And there are some nice little restaurants downtown St. Paul that seem to be packed with the right type of people. And not a lot really goes on. But when you look at, in comparison, the city of downtown Minneapolis with First Avenue, Hennepin, 6th, 7th, and 8th Street, 9th, and the different places and the hot spots, and, you know, that's a festering breeding ground for this kind of heinous crimes, petty crimes, and now murders, plenty of them, and shooting. I recall back in 2009, my wife and I were downtown Minneapolis walking, I think it would be west on Hennepin, no, east on Hennepin Avenue, going back to the parking lot. Just across from the library down there to get in our car and go home after a night dinner.
Oh, that's about that. Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I heard above me, zing, 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 zing. I said, honey, someone's firing a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And she heard it too. And we freaked out and just, we jogged it to the car, okay? And, I mean, just random things like that. I don't know what happened, if anybody got hit that night or anything. I don't think they did. But just to experience that live downtown Minneapolis, you know, this, something needs to be done. And that was in 2009, Mr. Edwards. So it's only gotten worse. The bullets
yes,
are actually
yes,
hitting
yes,
people.
Yes, and it takes the downtown council and the Chamber of Commerce, I mean, you know, to – well, you know, white organizations that lobby for big corporate and takes them to, I guess, make people move. By the way, big editorial for those that are saying that, you know, we're making up anything as pertains to security at City Hall. Big editorial in yesterday's edition of the big Minneapolis Star Tribune praising Vice Council Member, Vice Chair, Jenkins, Democrat 8th Ward, of raising the issue of safety and comfort and protection for the citizens that come in to that facility, and comparing it to the heavy security at the government center, which has the administrative offices and the courts, if you will. So it appears that you're right, sir, that there's a level of sudden consciousness. Notice I use the word sudden consciousness in regards to the safety of our administrative building sitting in the heart of downtown Minneapolis. You know, as much money as this being you know, spent on protection and security and et cetera, you would think that we wouldn't have this continued problem. But maybe we can take another look at it next week, Mr. Allen, you know what I'm saying? But
hey,
by
hey,
the way,
hey, Mr. Edwards,
let us remember our friends in Memphis, Tennessee. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just want to say this just came out 10:15 this morning, a body found in South Minneapolis, 37th Street and Clinton, South Minneapolis at 5:30 a.m., found dead, being investigated as a homicide. That just was came up on the wire at 10:15 a.m. this morning. So we're talking about all this killing and what's going on, and it has not stopped. And this reactionary stance instead of a proactive stance by the city council and all these agencies that they supposedly got in the street need to take another close look at this, because this is absolutely ridiculous. Every time you look at the newspaper or you go to the wire here in the studio, on a Saturday night morning before our show or during our show, we find out that another person has been found dead or shot.
Right. By the way,
the
just for historical purposes and GPS, 37th and Clinton, that's right there by the fire station. And if I'm not mistaken, Ms. Allen, behind the spokesman recorder.
Yes. Right. Actually,
spokesman
right
recorder.
Right,
you're talking 37th and Clinton. You're right there behind the fire station. Which would be a half a block away, and the
Bathany.
Minnesota spokesman corner. Yeah.
And Sabathany.
Wow.
And Sabathany.
I'm sorry, definitely
right
Sabathany. Definitely Sabathany, because Sabathany runs, you know, like lengthwise. That is, and that was just 14 and a half minutes ago, correct? Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes,
body
sir.
Found early this morning. Wow. It's scary. Yeah. It's scary out here. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, man.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
James Brown, take us home. All right.
We're going to do that.